Hello, and welcome to the 13th edition of Talking Solutions, the podcast of the Association for Solution-Focused Hypnotherapy. I'm Sally Hare.
And I'm Trevor Eddles, and we're both experienced solution-focused hypnotherapists. Today, we'll be focusing on obsessive-compulsive disorder, or OCD, and we're really pleased to have the very experienced solution-focused hypnotherapist, Nicola Griffiths, with us. Welcome, Nicola, and thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Nicola is one of our first fellows of the AFSFH, and for good reason too. She was inaugural CEO of the association when it was established back in 2010. She's also a lecturer and supervisor and runs continuing professional development courses on OCD.
Okay, Nicola, I think there's a public perception of OCD that it's all about putting your cans of beans with the labels facing out or having to wash your hands a lot. And people sometimes joke about being a bit OCD when they like things done a certain way. I don't necessarily think this is helpful because true OCD can have a devastating effect on someone's life. So how would you define OCD?
Well, you're right, and that's quite often, you know, what people think of OCD, and they can jest saying, you know, well, I'm a bit OCD about my collection of handbags, or I'm obsessive about football or whatever. But it's an actual fact, a really serious mental health condition. And that's characterized, defined by intrusive thoughts, which lead to carrying out compulsions that are not necessarily logical and obsessing about things. And the intrusive thoughts, I mean, we all have intrusive thoughts, not necessarily negative ones. I smiled the other day, actually. I was sitting Friday night watching TV, and all of a sudden I had a thought jump into my mind, so intrude into my other thinking, that was, actually, I've got a client tomorrow morning on a Saturday morning, which is very rare for me to do that. So that was helpful. So it's not necessarily intrusive thoughts are negative, but with OCD people, the difference with people who have OCD compared to those who don't have OCD is they normally have negative intrusive thoughts and they hang on to those thoughts. They don't put them down. Whereas somebody without OCD, they might have a negative thought and then think to themselves, well, actually, that's not relevant, or, you know, that's not right, and put it down and move on. So the intrusive thoughts are a really big part of OCD. And this can lead to compulsions. These can be mental or physical acts that the OCD sufferer believes will decrease the anxiety. And in actual fact, that can be the case initially. Compulsions can make people feel better at first. But in the long run, we know that, you know, compulsions do make things worse. And anything can become compulsive. If you can do, say, or think it, it can become compulsive. So, for instance, touching things in a particular order or at a certain time, arranging objects in a particular way. Now, we can all have traits of this. My husband laughs at me because I have a cutlery drawer. Within that, I have a cutlery tray for the individual knives and forks. And if he puts the serving spoon in with the dessert spoons, he knows I'm going to come and move it. But I don't have a meltdown because of it, and I'm not constantly worried about it. Whereas people with OCD would go back and check to see that that cutlery drawer is correctly laid out, whereas I'm getting off and doing whatever else it is that I want to do. Another aspect of compulsions is saying things again and again, or repeatedly asking others to tell you that everything is all right, seeking reassurance. And then we've got the obsession side of things. And often this can have certain themes such as contamination. So that's where, as you mentioned, Trevor, you know, people washing their hands, but we're not just talking about washing our hands when we go to the bathroom. We're talking about continually going backwards and forwards. And in some cases, scrubbing your hands until somebody bleeds. I mean, it's serious. Obsessions are when our intrusive thoughts are very hard to manage and they make us feel very distressed and have a negative impact on our daily lives. They stick in our brains and then we get into a negative loop because then we're worrying about what they mean or why they won't go away. Many years ago, I remember seeing one of the case studies that I talked to in research. I saw him over 10 years ago, but he would worry that on his way to work driving, he'd knock somebody down. And he would therefore turn the car around and go back and check. He'd even get out the car and check the ditch of the lane. And he would go backwards and forwards and even involve his wife to get into the car, go back home, get his wife to come in the car and check that he hadn't knocked anybody down. And that takes up a hell of a lot of energy and time and can prevent you from doing the simplest of tasks. That's when you get to the real extreme ends of OCD.
Thank you. That's really helpful, sort of, to touch on that popular kind of definition of the what, and actually what it can mean for people. I wonder if you can tell us how, OCD can really impact someone's life. You mentioned the guy, having to go back and check. How else can it affect people's lives?
Well, if you take that guy, for instance, it's going to disrupt work because he was always late for work. If you have people who have a checking obsession, I had a lady who would check behind pictures to see if there was a spider there. She had a fear of spiders, but she would actually be going around checking everywhere for spiders, including in a boardroom before a board meeting. And she wouldn't let anybody come in to the board meeting until she'd gone around and checked everywhere. And so, therefore, it disrupts that side of things, which then has a negative effect on your confidence. And then you find yourself challenging your own decisions. It can certainly have a very negative effect on relationships. So, with intrusive thoughts, these can be showstoppers on life, and the person's family or partner or whoever it is won't necessarily know what to do. Person with OCD is likely to be constantly wanting reassurance over and over again, but that won't make sense to somebody who doesn't have OCD, and that therefore we can understand how that might have a negative effect and cause arguments and real frustration within a relationship. It can keep people housebound through fear of looming vulnerability is another intrusive negative thought, the constant sense of what ifs. And if you take the guy that I talked about with the driving, worrying he'd knock somebody over, it got to the point before he came and got therapeutic help that he wouldn't actually go to work. He was signed off with stress because he didn't want to leave the house. And then another aspect is hoarding. I saw a documentary once on OCD. So this wasn't somebody that I saw, but it was a documentary and it was a really interesting documentary. And it was showing a woman who was getting a husband to help her pick through every single item in their kitchen waste bin to double check it before she'd let him put it out in the dustbin.
Goodness.
And even then, she kept asking for reassurance as she picked individual things out that there wasn't something of value stuck to it. Now, logically, she knew there wasn't anything of value in there, but this is where the subconscious mind goes into this negative loop. And she's sat there and he's helping her by constantly having to give her reassurance that there's nothing there. And she'd prefer to keep bag upon bag of waste in the house rather than throw it into a dustbin. And the brains can be, when they're put under a significant amount of pressure and as a result of anxiety, can produce doubts that worry us continuously, dominating that person's thoughts. And so everyday life is massively greatly impacted because apart from anything else, it slows you down. And as it wears away the confidence, it has an extraordinary effect on your ability to do anything else.
Okay, that's brilliant. I guess my obvious follow-on question is, how can solution-focused hypnotherapy help?
I think with all types of clients that come to solution-focused hypnotherapists, our brain explanation really allows pennies to drop. They get an understanding of how the brain works and why it's doing what it's doing. And if people suffer from OCD, then they're especially in need of this answer to understand how the brain works. And once they understand that it's not necessarily them, it's something they've got and that they can get rid of, that you can almost see them physically relax in the chair, their shoulders drop because we're saying, right, there's certain things you have to do, and one of them is to stick with sessions, therapeutic sessions. But we do this initial consultation, a brain explanation for the client's benefit, and that is massive. That is really makes a big difference. Plus, we know that, and in our work, we talk about neurons that fire together, wire together. So if a child keeps repeating 5 + 5 = 10, then before long, we know the brain's circuitry has changed and they've got an automatic thing that, so us three don't need to think, what is 5 and 5? We automatically come up with a 10. But with OCD, people get locked in a negative loop. And so in the same way that these neurons are firing together to wire together to come up with 5 + 5 = 10, they're constantly going around in a negative loop. So the brain is constantly getting fired into a negative state. Now, we've got the amygdala within the subconscious mind, equivalent to a meerkat on guard, sat on its bank, looking out for danger. And it's going to whistle to its friends if it sees danger on the horizon. Everybody goes scurrying down into their rabbit holes. This is what's happening with this part of the brain. It's basically triggering an alarm bell, knocking us into a negative state of mind, an alarm state. But in actual fact, there's no danger. But because the person keeps thinking negative thoughts, then they're getting trapped in that negative loop. And the brain is now sensing danger, and around we go again. When we're working with solution focus, we're much more focused on positives, and we're acknowledging that the person has issues and is suffering from OCD. But we're also saying, but what's been good? And that's just something they're not looking for. So those neurons aren't firing together to wire together. So this, when we start focusing on the positives, we start creating that positive neurotransmitter, well, a number of positive neurotransmitters, including serotonin. But this is why with medication for OCD, when they're treated with SSRIs, which help with serotonin, it's effective for between 40 and 60% of patients, because we know there's a lack of serotonin. So if we help the client focus on the positives, that improves the serotonin uptake. It's also reducing anxiety, which will reduce that meerkat, that amygdala activity, and then the client begins to get more control. Now, it is a slower process because a lot of OCD clients, or even, people suffering from OCD, will explain that any change, including positive change, is scary. Now, in actual fact, that can apply to a lot of people with mental health conditions, but it's especially so with OCD. So, what we're doing is when we move into the solution-focused psychotherapy aspect of it with the miracle question, we're helping the client imagine a preferred future. And we're helping to facilitate it by thinking about life beyond OCD, for instance. But we're doing this in very small steps because if we move them too fast, that gets scary and the old meerkat starts screaming, and we have to be very careful with this and move slowly. So, therefore, we're doing an inner rehearsal by the miracle question. We're not saying you've got to go and do this. We're saying just think through what would be different if. ABC. And we take them on a gentle journey of talking through small changes before they even need to actually consider taking those steps in real life. And then, with the help of trance work, that's when the subconscious mind is just relaxing and not being so defensive. The subconscious then becomes more susceptible to positive suggestion if it's for the client's benefit. And this is a very, when we go into relaxation, it's one of the quickest ways to reduce that amygdala, that meerkat activity. But also, generally, with solution-focused work, we're not talking about the problem. And that can come to a huge relief to people because you can almost see their shoulders drop. And we say, right, we're not going to actually be focusing on the problem. It's if you need to explain something to me about the problem, that's fine. But in actual fact, in these sessions, we're going to be talking about how you want things to be. And I do say to people with all aspects of the work I do, it's not necessarily about the belief process, it's what you want. And then once you see this happening, that's when the belief process will kick in. But in not talking about the problem, we're beginning to balance the chemicals within the brain as we focus on the good things and how we want to be and taking those small steps. And that can take a bit of the client's. You can see they're thinking, well, how are we going to fix the problem if we're not talking about it? But I've been doing this for over 16 years now, and it works. It really does. So by focusing on the solutions and how we want to be, we're rewiring the client's thought processes to think about the good things.
Thank you. Yeah, it does work indeed. And thank you for that. So if someone's listening who feels their intrusive thoughts, compulsions, obsessions are getting in the way of how they want to live their life, what self-help tips would you give them? What resources can they use now to feel better?
I think there's a few things. I think Trevor's kindly going to put a link through to Mind, which has a very good website. I think he's going to put a link underneath this podcast, which is great for not only sufferers of OCD but relatives too. So I think without obsessing and going off and reading everything there is to read, I think Mind has some really good information on OCD that can be very helpful for people. I also think talking to somebody about it can be very helpful. That, problem shared is a problem halved type thing. Getting therapeutic assistance is obviously a good way. Also, when you're not in the throes of OCD and the negatives of it, consider talking through a plan of action with a relative or friend when you are feeling well. And for instance, giving OCD a name, because this isn't part of you, and it's almost to make it as a third party and give it a name. Let's call it Fred. It means that if we're reaching out to a member of the family to say, are you sure I'm okay? And that seek that reassurance. The family member, if they've agreed this plan of action in advance, can say, "Is this Fred talking?" And without being logical about it, just say, "Look, I understand," and give them a hug rather than say, "Yes, everything's okay." Because as soon as we start reassuring, that's just continuing the cycle of the person wanting even more reassurance. It's really understanding that it's something you can get rid of with the right help. And the AFSFH, bless their hearts, have got a really good directory of solution-focused hypnotherapists. And if you go and get some help like that, medication has got some good grounding in it. But in actual fact, if you link it with talking therapies as well, the improvement rate is significant. But for family and friends also who are impacted by it, I think one of the most important things is to stay calm and try and keep an even tone of voice. Acknowledge the person is suffering, but try as much as is possible not to get entangled with it or to get frustrated or angry, because that just increases the anxiety. And then it's a typical solution focus 10A is for the sufferer themselves to find what works. That in actual fact does work for that individual and try doing more of it, not on a compulsive or repetitive way. But I've found over the years that in addition to talking therapies, things like yoga and meditation, possibly yoga more, can be helpful. Meditation's great, but if we're suffering real stress and anxiety, it can be difficult to go into a meditative state. Whereas with hypnotherapy, the hypnotherapist is guiding you. You've got something to latch onto with the hypnotherapist's voice to concentrate on. There's also a very good book. I've got loads of books on OCD, some of which are really good, some of which are not so good. But one of the ones that I think a few people have recommended to me is Rewire Your OCD Brain by Catherine Pittman and William Youngs. And I've got it here in front of me with loads of sticky notelets because of good information in there. So I think, if you did want to know more about what you can do to help yourself, that's a good book to read.
Thank you, Nicola. And yeah, we will put a link to that, the Mind website, which advise people how they can help friends or relatives who are experiencing OCD. And also, I think it's OCD UK who provide advice and information and also campaign to end the trivialisation and stigma of OCD as well.
Yes, that's a good one. I sent that link through, I think, Trevor,
Yes.
to you as well, because that has got some really, well, obviously, as OCD UK, it's got some really good information on there.
Both those links will be up when we publish the podcast. Let's go on and talk about you for a minute. So, what are you doing at the moment, and what are your plans for the future?
Well, apart from looking after my Indian runner ducks, Trevor. I'm continuing with helping people. So my hypnotherapy business, even though I'm in Portugal, I work 100% online with clients in the UK. I'm a supervisor and lecturer, so that's all still going off in the background. I'm in the middle of creating a conversion course with the lovely Jane Fox from CPHT in Sheffield for those hypnotherapists who've graduated already at diploma level, but not in solution focus, and they want to add solution focus to their toolkit because it is a very valuable tool to have. So we're working away behind the scenes, creating that course, which launches in September. And then I'm supposed to be sort of like semi-retired, but I'm finding having a little bit more time on my hands, fascinating reading. And this is where I run the OCD CPD for therapists. It's keeping up with the advancements in what's happening with the brain, because it's that's what I loved about this job for the last, long time. It's constantly changing, and there's new research out there. And in the years gone by, I was too busy to keep up with it all. But now I've got this time to sit with a book and read, which is lovely.
Fantastic. Well, I'm going to finish by asking you what I ask my clients at the end of their initial consultation, which is there anything else you'd like to have said that you haven't had a chance to say yet?
I think I've done enough talking for today, but I think the one thing I would say is for people suffering OCD, you can get rid of it. It might take a bit of hard work. It's not easy, but you can get rid of it. It's if you get a cold or flu, you don't think, well, I've got this for life. And I think it's important that you have some positivity in your thoughts.
Oh,
Okay,
that's fantastic.
brilliant. Yeah, well, thank you very much, Nicola. I mean, it's been really great talking to you.
It has
Well,
indeed.
thanks for inviting me. Thanks for inviting me.
And you can find more information about our other podcasts on our website, www.afsfh.com. And you'll also find articles, information, and resources. Plus, as Nicola mentioned, our solution-focused hypnotherapist directory, where you'll be able to look through the profiles of our fully qualified members and choose just the right therapist for you.
And next time, we'll be talking to Jackie McCormick about neurodiversity. But until then, it's goodbye from me, Trevor Eddles.
And for me, Sally Herr.
Goodbye.
Hi.